this person? And we said the answer is the blessing of God. Because it is always the case that we become the kind of person that someone we care about blesses. It is always the case that we become the kind of person that someone we care about blesses. And so if we care about God, the more we care about God, then the more we'll become the kind of person he blesses, right? The kind of person he approves of or he praises. And, as we've already seen, that person is a person of the Beatitudes. But here's the rub. We don't always care about God very much, do we? We don't always care about God very much. Last week, Jesus talked about ways we care more about the praise of people. Now this week, he talks about ways we care more about treasures on earth. And as with the praise of people, when we live for treasures on earth, we become a certain kind of person. Right? When we live for these things, we become a certain kind of person, but it's not the kind of person that God wants us to be, and I think what we'll see, it's not the kind of person we want to be either. How so? 3 points for this morning. Where is your heart? How is your eye? And who is your master? Heart, eye, master. Let's start with where is your heart? Where is your heart? All right, so where do you put stuff that you care about? The stuff that you care about, where do you put it? The things that are valuable to you. I imagine that some of those things are on your body right now. Your wallet, your purse, your phone. But then there are other things that we don't keep close to us, right? We keep them in places like a bank or a special box in your house or on the cloud, in the cloud. I like Googled the right preposition and I'm not sure which one to use. So in, on, the cloud, behind complicated passwords. Whether we keep them close to us or not, the reason for why we keep these things, these valuable things, where we keep them is because they're valuable to us. We want to keep them safe. And so we try to find the safest place to keep them. Jesus gets this. He does. He wants the things that we treasure to be in a safe place as well. But here's the thing. The safe place, that safe place, is nowhere to be found on earth. That safe place is nowhere to be found on earth. In verse 19 of our text this morning, Jesus says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth." Why not? Because earth is a place where moth and rust destroy, is a place where thieves break in and steal, and perhaps we can add to the moth and rust things like lowered interest rates and rising inflation. Erodes the value of your savings. Increasing tariffs, negative policy decisions, wipe out the value of your home. Perhaps we can add to thieves that break in and steal, thieves that hack in and steal, even with your complicated passwords. Or who do predatory lending and steal. You've given them your passwords. Our society has gotten a lot more complex and complicated and sophisticated, but Jesus' point here is still true, right? Our treasures are not safe anywhere here on earth. They're just not. And people make money off of that fear. Jesus is not trying to make money off of that fear. And even for those who somehow escape the destruction of moth and rust or the robbery of thieves, which I don't know how that's possible, there is still that ultimate destruction. There is still that ultimate thievery. Death. When our life on earth ends, none of the treasures that we've laid up for ourselves here on earth will matter because we can't take it. We go. And so verse 20, instead, do this, Jesus says, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Because heaven is safe, right? Heaven is a place where none of that destruction or thievery will happen or will ever happen, not even that death part. And Jesus can say this because he knows, right? He knows because he's been there. As the second person of the Trinity, he's been there for a really long time, since before even the foundation of the world. And so we can know that when he says this, he is speaking from experience. His words about the safety of heaven are absolutely trustworthy. And then Jesus tells us why it's so important to hear this. Verse 21, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." You know, when the Bible talks about heart, it's not talking about the organ that pumps blood, generally. The heart understands that it is a seat of our affections. It is a center of our desires and our loves. It's the center of our wills and motivations. It's that thing beneath what we know. It's that thing beneath the strength or speed of our bodies. You can be smart, you can be knowledgeable, you can be strong, you can be fast, but it is the heart that decides which way you use those things, for good or for ill. In other words, our hearts are at the core of who we are. It's the core of who we are. But even the core of who we are can be shaped and formed. And the shaping and forming is directed by treasure. In the same way that plants always grow towards the light, our hearts are always drawn towards what we treasure. In fact, that is the definition of treasure. The treasure is a treasure because it's what our heart is drawn towards. Which is why Jesus warns us to not lay up our treasures on earth, because on earth, that's where your heart's going to be. That's where you are going to be. And that is not a safe place. In the same way that you and I would never want to leave our wallet or our phone or our purse in a place that's not safe, Jesus, more significantly, would never want to leave our hearts here on earth because he knows it's not safe here. Which is why he tells us, lay up your treasures in heaven so your hearts will be there where it will be ultimately safe. So now the reflective question. How do you know if you are putting your treasures on earth? How do you know if you're laying up treasure on earth? Anxiety. Anxiety. Andrew's going to say more about this next week when he preaches through the next part of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. But from our text today, we see that the main problem with treasure on earth is that it is not secure. That is the main problem in our text today. Because of moth, rust, thieves, all the rest, it is not safe here. It follows then that anxiety over that insecurity is a key indicator that we are treasuring those things. But how do I know that what I'm feeling is anxiety and not simply good stewardship, being concerned, managing things well, right? It's not wrong to be concerned about a roof leak and needing to find someone to come fix it. It is not wrong to be concerned about a poorly performing investment and wanting to take your money elsewhere. So how do you know you're crossing the line from managing your resources well to being anxious about it? The answer is when you start crossing the lines, when you start breaking the commandments. So for example, is your anxiety over finances getting in the way of worshiping the Lord or keeping the Sabbath holy? If or when your parents take away some possession of yours for the sake of discipline, do you get so anxious about it that you say things or do things that do not honor your parents? Crossing the line. Does your anxiety about having enough money lead you to lie, like on a financial aid application or a tax return? If you want to know that you have crossed the line into anxiety, have you crossed the line? These are just some examples of the broader principle. When we lay up treasures on earth, we will cross the line from simply being concerned about managing things well to becoming anxious over the things that we have, because Jesus has told us our treasures here are not safe, and neither are our hearts. So, where is your heart? That's your first question. Now the second, how is your eye? How is your eye? In verses 22 and 23, Jesus uses a series of metaphors that seem to be out of place in the context of our text this morning, right? What do eyes and lamps and light and darkness have to do with money and treasure? And before we talk about what these metaphors mean, we need to acknowledge that Jesus' main point is really clear. Main point, right? Healthy eye, good. Not healthy eye, bad. Eye is important. The light that comes in will fill your whole body, your whole self. That's clear. But now the question, what is a healthy eye? All right, what is a bad eye? In the same way that Jesus is not talking about your blood-pumping organ when he says heart, he's also not talking about the orbs in your head when he's talking about eyes. Two possible interpretations. The first is to translate the Greek word for healthy, more literally, as singular or individual. According to this interpretation, the healthy eye is the eye that is able to focus. The eye that is able to focus. That makes sense, right? If your eye isn't able to focus, there's something wrong with it. The healthy eye is the eye that has a singular and undivided focus. The bad eye, then, is one that is distracted, that has a divided focus. So that's the first interpretation. Don't have a divided focus. Have a singular focus on one master, not money, but God. The second interpretation is to understand the term bad eye kind of like evil eye. Right? We understand this. It's an idiom, right? It's when you give someone the evil eye, right? In Matthew's day, when the term evil eye was being used among the Jewish population, they would have understood evil eye to mean stingy or greedy or envious or ungenerous. So when you think about evil eye, you can picture in your mind Ebenezer Scrooge at the beginning of A Christmas Carol. You know, just the bony hands and like the clutching of the coins, right? That's what evil eye could mean. In contrast, then, the healthy eye is the one that is generous, that is giving, that is open-handed, that is kind. So now picture Ebenezer Scrooge at the end of A Christmas Carol, right? Lavishly, generously giving to others. So according to this interpretation, the second interpretation, don't let your eye be clutching the things of earth. Don't let your eye be captured by the stuff around us, but be freely generous towards others. So those are two ways to interpret verses 22 and 23, but I don't see why we have to choose between them. I don't see why we have to choose between them. I think there's a reason why those verses sit right there between verses 19 and 21 and verse 24. I think it's a bridge or an overlap that's meant to contain both of these interpretations. For when we have a singular and undivided focus on God and serve Him as master instead of money, then we naturally are going to treasure the things of heaven instead of treasuring the things of earth. And if we stop treasuring the things on earth, then our clutch of them, our grasp of them, our stinginess about them diminishes when we stop treasuring the things of earth. And when we start treasuring the things of heaven, we start thinking and valuing the things that heaven values, which would be the people around us. Our possessions become less our master, and the people would become more their servants. Earlier, we talked about anxiety as an indicator that we are laying up treasures on earth. And we said we need to be careful that we're not crossing the line, right? From going from being a good steward and managing our resources into anxiety, right? We don't want to cross the line by crossing the lines. But if you remember from a few sermons ago, sure, Jesus wants us to not cross the lines, but he's also very interested in us pursuing a direction. If anxiety is a sign, and from our text today, that direction is generosity. Right? That direction is generosity. If anxiety is a sign that we are laying up for ourselves treasures on earth, then generosity is a sign that we are laying up for ourselves treasures in heaven. But generosity isn't simply the opposite of anxiety. It is also the antidote. Generosity is also the antidote. What do I mean? If you want to feel rich, if you want to feel rich, instead of being anxious about being poor, give stuff away. Feel rich when you give stuff away. If you want to feel like you have plenty, instead of being anxious about not having enough, then share what you have with others. Sharing with others helps you to feel like you have plenty. If you want to lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where we can know that our treasure is ultimately safe, then let go of the treasures of earth. Generosity is not just the opposite of anxiety. It is actually what helps to calm our anxiety. It's actually what helps to soothe our worry. So then, what are you going to do next? What is the next thing you will do to show generosity? What's the next thing you'll do? If you need a little help, think about someone in your life who you know is generous. Think about someone in your life who you know freely gives and shares. It could be stuff, it could be time. Picture who they are. Maybe even write down their name in your notes. What makes them so generous? What do they do that makes you want to call them a generous person? Now pick one of those things and do that. There's your next thing. Generosity is one of those things that every time we do it, we are glad we did. But we often need to push through all the reasons why we don't do it. And a big reason why we are not generous has to do with what we are looking at. Are we singularly focused on God, or is our gaze falling too much onto the things of earth? Do we have an evil eye, a stingy eye, or do we have a healthy eye? How is your eye? That's the second point. Now lastly, the third point, who is your master? Who is your master? In verse 24, Jesus says that no one can serve two masters, right? You either hate one and love the other, or you are devoted to one and you despise the other. And then he applies this kind of general statement to the context of money. Therefore, you cannot serve both God and money. But why not? Right? We said this last week. I like to maximize my benefits. Why not? Why can't I have both, Jesus? Why can't I try to serve both God and money? Or, to use a language from earlier in this text, why can't I try to lay up treasure both on earth and in heaven? Can't I have both? Or, let's put this even more crassly, can't I be rich and a Christian? Can't I pursue being rich and pursue following Jesus? Can't I do that, Jesus? Well, perhaps it helps to realize that the Greek word for money is actually mammon, which is more than just a form of currency. It is a form of idolatry. You see, mammon is a false god in whom we trust whenever we think that the stuff of earth will protect us and provide for us and keep us safe and satisfy us. But you don't have to read very much of the Bible to realize the one true God is very jealous for us. He is quite jealous for us. He does not have very much patience for false worship or false gods. And that's why Jesus contrasts the two. And he says, we can serve one or the other. You can serve mammon or God, but God's not going to let you serve both. We should note, however, that it's not just God who is jealous. So is mammon. Jesus' statement about hating one and loving the other goes both ways. It's not just God who is unwilling to share mastery. Mammon is the same way as well. And here's why. We said earlier today that the more we care about God, then the more we become the kind of person that he approves of, that he blesses, that he praises, right? But it unfortunately works the same way with mammon. The more we care about mammon, the more we find protection and provision and safety and satisfaction in the things that we can buy or have, the more that we lay up treasures on earth, the more we'll become the kind of person that mammon wants us to be. But the problem is that the person who mammon wants us to be and the person who God wants us to be are directly opposite of each other. You cannot be both. There is a trade-off. So you may be asking, what kind of person does mammon want me to be? Glad you asked. Mammon wants us to be a people who live only for the now. Mammon wants us to be a people who live only for the now. Why? Because that's all mammon can control, right? It knows that moth and rust will destroy and thieves will break in and steal. It knows that whatever thrill it can have is only momentary because it will fade. It knows that whatever happiness it can offer is only fading. And you know what I'm talking about when we become like the people of mammon, the child who absolutely has to have this thing, and so you buy it for them, and what happens the next day? They don't play with it. Or the adult who does the same thing, who is feeling down for whatever reason, and so they go out and buy something to feel better, and it does feel better for that moment. But then afterwards, it's gone. The company that pushes its employees harder and harder to get things we want shipped to our doorsteps faster and faster because we want it now. This is the kind of person and frankly the kind of society that mammon is forming us into, a people without patience, a people without a sense of delayed gratification, and therefore a people without the ability to experience lasting joy, because all we can handle is a flash in the pan. We become a people who buy and throw away everything, leaving a world covered in plastic and trash and old phones that would have worked perfectly if they had not forced us to upgrade. That is what mammon is forming us into, and you see it all around us. But God would form us into a completely different kind of people, a people who live not for the now of earth, but who live for the future of heaven, of people who don't need to buy the next new thing because they are instead doing the next generous thing. What's that next generous thing? God is forming you that way. So perhaps it's clear now why there's no way we can serve both God and mammon. Those two masters shape us in completely opposite ways. There is a trade-off. And Jesus says, go with God. He's a much better bet. Oh, but Jesus, how can you be sure? How can we know that the trade-off is worth it? How can we know that trading away the now of mammon will actually gain for us the future of God, right? Present value of money, greater than diminishing returns of money. How can we know? Jesus says, look at my life. Look at my life. He had no eye for the stuff of earth. He had no interest in worldly wealth. In fact, when someone asked him to show a coin, he said, actually, I don't have one. Can someone show me a coin? And yet, still, he was destroyed. Not by moth or rust, but by three nails and a cross. And yet still, his life was stolen from him, not by thieves who break in, but by friends who betrayed him and religious leaders who were jealous of him. But then, see what happened to him. He did not avoid destruction and thievery, but he did go through it. He went through death, and he came out the other side in powerful resurrection. He went through the shame of the cross and came out the other side with glorious new life in hand. And now he is seated on his throne in heaven with a body that will never fade or fall apart. And he is reigning over a world whose sheen and splendor will never go away. Look at Jesus' life. He went through the worst thievery, the worst destruction that could happen on earth. And yet he came out the other side to prove that not even the worst can stop him. And if you follow him, then the worst will not stop you either. If you follow him, then the worst will not stop you either. For if we indeed treasure him who is now in heaven, then what does he say? He says, one day your heart will be there also, right? For where your treasure is, your heart will be. If your treasure is in heaven, then your heart, along with the whole of yourself, will be there with him. So if you want to know if the trade is worth it, then look to Jesus, whose life is proof that it is worth it, to give up the now of mammon to gain the heaven of God. A sermon about money is ultimately a sermon about worship. Where's your heart? How's your eye? Who's your master? These are worship questions. But you know, it's still a sermon about money. It's still a sermon about our stuff and our possessions and what we do with them, and we let them do with us. So will you let your stuff make you anxious? Or will you instead use your stuff to be generous? What is the next thing, even today, that you will do to be generous? How will you show that you don't serve mammon but God? How will you show that your heart and treasure are not here on earth but in heaven? I've already given the example of Scrooge as someone to not emulate. Now let me end with the better example of a man named Matthew Henry, who, upon being robbed, so he just got robbed, goes home and he journals. Man, okay. He wrote in his diary words to this effect. Let me read them to you. Lord, I thank you. I thank you that I have never been robbed before, and that although they took my money, they spared my life. And although they took everything, wasn't much, and that it was I who was robbed, and not I who robbed others. Here is someone whose eye was on God, whose treasure is in heaven. How about us? Let's pray together. Jesus, we want to follow you. You're the better investment. We want our hearts to be in heaven because that is the safest place. But we confess that our eyes sometimes get stuck at the superficial stuff, and we don't see beyond to the heavenly and eternal things. So we ask for your help. We ask for your help to rid ourselves of anxiety and set to pursue generosity, to make you our master and not mammon. Help us to do the next generous thing, we pray.